Blog Talk Radio.
Coming to you from the Blog Talk Radio studios in the heart of Hudson County. Folks, you know it's always in Union City and Weehawken, respectively. We are working the marks here and, of course, being sponsored by Famcast Media. And, of course, folks, make sure you always check them out, as well as all of our great content on blogtalkradio.com/workinthemarks. I am New Jersey's premier award-winning journalist and the weapon of mass disruption in Garden State Media. Yes, it's me, the professor, Fernando Uribe, and he is the PBR superstar, the glorious, the notorious, the illustrious Patrick Rivera. What's going on, PBR?
Well, professor, to quote the late, great Mr. Bill Masterson, it's colder than a witch's tit out here, and it's certainly quite cold here in the garbage state of New Jersey.
Well, just trying to stay warm.
Yeah. Just trying to stay warm out here. But we're gonna heat up these fucking marks, huh? We're gonna get some heat with these marks today, huh?
That's right. We are gonna do that. And folks, as always, write to us. We love getting emails from all of you, especially our loyal listeners that for some reason always got something to say to me in my group chats or my DMs. About, oh, Fern, you're a blowhard, or that indie guy you work with, he's a blowhard more than you are, and that's saying something. I don't know what to tell you, folks. It's interesting while people have their perceptions, but guess what? Write to us. We love to hear your feedback at workinthemarks@gmail.com. Once again, workinthemarks@gmail.com. Don't forget to follow the show on Instagram @working_the_marks. Hit us up on our own Instagrams, of course, @PaddyRican, that's PaddyRican, and of course,
Why do you keep plugging my fucking gimmick, man? Don't write me. I'm not going to write any of you people. I don't want anything to do with any of you. All right? Write the show page. That's better.
That's right. If you want to write to Pat, write to me at the Fernando Zone, of course, on Twitter as well, folks, @PatrickSKVM, and certainly, of course, hit my own Instagram up @TheFernandoZone. And, of course, the show's in Twitter @working_marks. Of course, our great episodes are brought to you by Famcast Media. Shout out to D. Rotten, our great producer there. And, of course, folks, wherever you get your podcasts, do download them. And take Working the Marks with you, whether you're working up some of those annoying holiday pounds that don't seem to go away, walking your dog, leaving a booty call's house, wherever you get your podcasts. Take it with you. Listen to Working the Marks wherever and whenever you can. PBR, frigid Friday, to say the least here. Going to drop into single digits in just a little while. So, folks, again, as you're tuning in here and, are hopefully staying warm this weekend, we'll try to keep you a little hot as well, ladies and gentlemen, with some of our takes here today. Pat, let's get straight to the news here. Tragically, the brother of Macho Man Randy Savage and the guy with a great gimmick, Lanny Poffo, this week passed away at the age of 68. We all got introduced to Lanny Poffo kind of in the mid to late 80s. Again, when kayfabe was still alive, we didn't know that Lanny Poffo was the brother of Randy Poffo, a.k.a. Randy Savage. So kind of a, not a big-time wrestler, but found a great gimmick in the Genius. Used to spit out some great poems during the promos, during that era. Obviously, being linked up and managing Mr. Perfect Kurt Hennig in early 1989, which was very interesting. One of Lanny Poffo's most, I think, memorable poems was right after Randy Savage defeated Hacksaw Jim Duggan to become then, at the time, the king of the World Wrestling Federation. And folks, if you didn't watch it, go on YouTube, watch the coronation, watch the ceremony of all those great heels in the ring celebrating Randy Savage and Sherry Martel as the new king and queen of the WWF, whether it was at the time the WWF Tag Team Champions, the Brainbusters, one of my favorite all-time teams, the Powers of Pain, the Boss Man, Akeem, the Million Dollar Man, Dino Bravo, Greg Valentine, the Widowmaker, Barry Windham, ladies and gentlemen, was in the ring as well. Just a great collection of heels to honor Randy Savage. But that poem during the coronation by his brother, Lanny, was memorable. Sad day in professional wrestling this week, folks, as Lanny Poffo passes at the age of 68.
Yeah, Lanny Poffo, man. So to my recollection, and stop me if I'm wrong, because you're much, much older than I am. Wasn't he one of the first guys to do a moonsault on TV?
Yeah, he's actually one of the original kind of, yeah, high flyers, yeah, which was unheard of during that time because there was pretty much a lot of ground wrestling during the 80s.
Yeah, yeah, man. And he wrote some very clever poems, you know, like the Hill one you mentioned. You know, obviously the Brain Busters. I'm going to put my money down that that's FTR's favorite tag team. but, you know, Lanny Poffo was great, man, had a great way with words, was also a great ambassador for the Macho Man brand. Now, you know, I can't believe that you didn't know this, but I had mentioned it. Apparently, Lanny Poffo had a party trick where he would perform auto fellatio. So for those of you who don't know what that means, he could suck his own dick. That was the rumor. Pardon my French, but, you know, it's an adult show anyway. so that was one of the party tricks that he could perform. And, you know, there was videos about him talking about it. You know, Marty Jannetty would talk about it. All the people would talk about it. So, you know, he was kind of infamous for being able to perform that trick. But, you know, definitely a guy who left a mark in the business. And as I said before, a great ambassador for Macho Man's brand. And, you know, definitely one of the nicer guys, I would say, in the business. But, you know, sad loss, you know, for those of the people that knew him. And, you know, I'm sure he's somewhere in the great beyond with the Macho Man. And, you know, they're reunited again. So, yeah, certainly, you know, a sad loss in the business. But rest in peace, Lanny Poffo.
Absolutely. And I had the privilege, I think, as well as a lot of our collective friends, man, back in the spring of 2018, our good friend, a big fan of the show, one of my members of my legal counsel team, the great James Anthony Barricato, was gracious enough to have Lanny Poffo visit a wonderful venue in nightlife in Hudson County for some time. It's no longer with us, Cooper Place in Weehawken. Had a chance to meet Lanny Poffo, you know, take a picture with him and just, you know, chat up a little wrestling with him. He's so gracious, such a gentleman. You could tell the way he spoke about his brother. He loved Randy, and he was wearing his brother's Hall of Fame ring, certainly. And again, I hate to use the words, oh, this guy wasn't used right. And, you know, a lot of marks fall into that trap, Pat, about, oh, well, you know, I like this guy, and they weren't used right by this promoter or that promoter. I think Lanny Poffo found a great gimmick in the Genius. You know, he wasn't the best worker, but he wasn't a guy I think that, you know, at the time Vince McMahon looked at him as a great, great accessory for Curt Hennig, who was clearly the bigger star of that pairing. And Lanny Poffo did a great job. He would go on to manage the Beverly Brothers in the early 90s, WWF. Again, just a great personality, a guy who, just from everything I'm reading, was never full of himself, was just very gracious to deal with. And again, a gentleman. It's a great loss for the wrestling community, Pat, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, pardon me, I'm taking some sips of some hot soup, some hot vegetable soup right now because it's so friggin' cold out here. But yeah, Lanny, the thing about him that I find interesting is that, similar to his brother, he had a very unique voice, you know. Randy had a very unique voice because of a, you know, an accident, got, you know, hit with a baseball in the throat. But Lanny had a very distinct voice, kind of sounded like a tenor, you know, like an opera singer almost. And his delivery was always great. The way he would pronounce things phonetically, you know, it was very unique, very memorable. You know, when I was a kid, sometimes I would confuse him for Mark Merrow, because they kind of had a pretty similar look. Right? Coming up. So, you know, like they kind of had a similar thing going on with, like, that you know, that kind of semi-quasi-shaggy Kentucky waterfall mullet thing. And then they had, you know, like the goatee, you know, the handlebar thing kind of going on there a little bit. You know, I could have seen them, you know, being doppelgangers. But, yeah, Lanny definitely had a great voice. And, again, a memorable character. And, like, when you get into the business, you know, doesn't matter what you do, whether you're a referee, a manager, a wrestler, an announcer, whatever the case might be, you know, you get into the business to be memorable, you know? And Lanny Poffo, to me, is memorable. You know what I mean? I think anybody who ever had the privilege of seeing him as a manager, you know, remembered him. And he certainly stood out, whether it was through him performing a moonsault, his poems, his ability to speak. Lanny Poffo definitely was a memorable character. And in my opinion, somebody that's quite influential. I think some people have taken from him. You know, Damian Sandow is definitely a guy that comes to mind, you know, very, sure. Very similar, you know. But, yeah, definitely, you know, a loss for the wrestling business. I mean, look, anytime we lose good guys, it's dead, you know. You know, a couple weeks ago, you know, we were talking, unfortunately, about the passing of Jay Briscoe, another good guy, you know, that left us too soon. And Lanny certainly falls under that category, so... Yeah, you know, definitely a guy that left a lasting mark in the business, a memorable character, and, you know, somebody I'm sure that will be missed by his fans.
Absolutely. Just a tragic loss for sure. Pat, staying on the news cycle here, interesting, you know me, the financial fixation I have sometimes with pro wrestling, but looked up my subscription with the Wall Street Journal, faculty subscription, so very grateful for that. I don't have to pay full price for that, but... Wall Street Journal reporting that the financials are in for the fourth quarter of 2022. And Pat, unbelievable. And we talked about this off the air a little bit today, but WWE announced the company posted a revenue for the year 2022 of $1.3 billion, to quote the great Dr. Evil, billion, the highest in the company's history, the fourth quarter revenue for 2022. Again, folks, these are, you know, these, some of these financial terms maybe you're not familiar with, but pretty much when we're talking about fourth quarter, we're talking about essentially October 1st to December 31st in the financial quarters that were divided, obviously, four times a year. The WWE produced revenues of $325.3 million. So certainly under the auspices of, well, at the time, co-CEOs Stephanie Levesque and Nicholas Khan, great revenues. And listen, Pat, we saw this, right? We saw this from whether it was Clash at the Castle and the gate that produced, certainly the Survivor Series in Boston, merch sales. I don't like to talk about gate too much. Again, I don't like to get overly OCD or academic about this, but I'm always, yeah, I'm more about tickets sold. I don't like the gate number because everything is more expensive. You know, it's just a ticket doesn't cost today what it cost 10 years ago or 5 years ago. So I'm always leery about gate. Yeah, the number is great. You want to brag about money and brag about the, you know, ticket sales and stuff. But, you know, you look at their ads, you look at obviously what they're doing with their tours. I mean, we all know the Garden show during the holiday season here in New York City does well in Madison Square Garden. Obviously, I'm sure they do other holiday shows in other venues. I mean, you know, to think that for Mark, dirt sheet writers like Dave Meltzer and Brian Alvarez and Sean Ross Sapp and others that think that WWE is on the decline. Well, again, folks, you don't need an MBA from Harvard Business School or even Rutgers Business School to understand that the business model still working in WWE, Pat.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, water wet, you know what I'm saying? Like sky blue, sun hot. You know, it's like, come on, man. These are things we already know. So it doesn't really matter who's in charge. The WWE right now is in a real, real, real big boom. You know, and it's crazy to believe, like, TV ratings are not really killing it. But obviously, we've spoken about this here on Work in the Marks with Fernando Patrick, available on Blog Talk Radio, is also part of Fancast Media. you know, we've talked about this to no end, about how television is viewed differently than what it once was. You know, the product, you know, has, you know, competition, you know, UFC, other wrestling companies. Obviously, the one wrestling company that just really stands out that, you know, comes close to being competition for WWE is Impact Wrestling. You know, and then there's some other jabroni company run by a mark. But the point is Vince has created a model that will continue to make money no matter what. And Tony Khan and Steph are keeping an eye on it and are just doing little things to kind of increase certain things. And they're kind of keeping the ship steady, if you will. So, I mean, you know, these dudes, you know, Meltzer, Ross, Sap Ross, whatever his name is, and Alvarez, these guys, they're just going to throw as much shade as they can on WWE because they think that their audience will buy it. Meanwhile, their audience, even though they're kind of dumb enough to, like, subscribe to them, they know that WWE's king, and they're going to keep being king. So, yeah, I'm not surprised by any of this. I think they're going to continue to grow even more. I think the next quarter is going to be even more successful. You know, and WrestleMania. I mean, WrestleMania is going to be huge. I mean, what did we see all over the internet this week? Oh, Cody's not the right guy. Cody's not over. Sami's over. Now, look, I am not discounting the fact that Sami Zayn is over. Sami Zayn is 100% over. And I think you have to be a total idiot to not see that, or you just don't like the guy. But Cody Rhodes is a main event draw. Cody Rhodes is a big star. And Cody Rhodes in that WrestleMania main event makes sense. You know, you look at the merchandise sales. I mean, the top four merch sellers are Roman. And in, you know, this is in no particular order, but Roman, Sammy, Bray, and Cody. Okay? Now, Sammy's a top merch seller, no doubt. But Sammy's going to get his title shot probably at Elimination Chamber, and it's going to lead to him and Owens reforming. And you got to hand it to the Triple H for understanding and for kind of seeing, like, what could potentially happen and avoid the risk of the show being hijacked, okay? And this is where I will give Triple H the gold star over Vince in this regard, because Vince, I mean, it had to smack him in the face with Danielson for him to finally do it. You know, he was still very much insistent on Batista and Randy until he just couldn't deny it anymore. Until it was everywhere that he went, he was hearing yes. So, you know, he had to do that. And, you know, and we'll talk
and
about
Pat,
the Rumble a little bit later. But
Pat, and to be fair, I mean, I'm glad you brought that up. I'll let you finish your point, though. But you're right, though, because
sure.
The last thing we needed with everything that had gone on with Cody, the vignettes, the videos, like it was almost like it's not like Cody wasn't over. He is. But I think you wanted to make sure that the Rumble, his entrance at 30 was going to get the pop and the attention it did. Because, again, folks, let's look no further than 8 years ago, okay, because in Philadelphia in 2015, you know, after Danielson was out for a little time due to a neck injury and surgery, when he returned at the Rumble that year, I mean, let's be fair. Forget about 2014. Yeah, people were angry that he wasn't – he didn't win the Rumble. You say obviously Vince knew that you had to eventually put him in the main event to make a triple threat. But in 2015, look at what happened to again. What was the goal in 2015? The Shield was dissolved. They were pushing Roman as a major single star. And what was the goal? Let's push Roman to really into that main event status. And what happened? As soon as Danielson was announced for the Rumble, and he was eliminated, that hijacked the show. Fans were upset in Philadelphia. Now, Philadelphia's a marked town, and I get it. They have their favorites. But, like, what happened? Folks, and go back on Peacock if you don't believe me, and watch it. Watch the 2015 Royal Rumble match, again, as you endure the, you know, the 97 ads, you know. But
they won't have to endure that because they're not fucking cheapskates, you know.
Well, there you go. And what happened? As soon as Danielson was eliminated, it was a proverbial buzzkill in that arena. And guess what? That push for Roman didn't really go over as well as it should have. So I think that you probably want to avoid, you're right, the fact that if Zayn was in the Rumble, you wanted to avoid it being hijacked because you knew he wasn't going to win. You knew Cody was going to return. And you wanted Cody to kind of have that moment. Like, oh, you know what? This is the guy we're going to push now. So I think you're absolutely right. You hit it right on the head there.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and again, you credit to Triple H for having the awareness to say, you know what, this is a bad idea, and we're gonna ruin this. So let's keep Zayn out. Let's put Zayn in the main event because obviously people want to see him as a big part of the act, and let's have Cody have his moment, you know, and it worked out. It worked out to perfection, and. You know, you look at Raw the next night, nobody was chanting Sammy. Nobody was doing any of that stuff. Is he going to get it at some point? Maybe. You know, they are going to Brooklyn, I think. So, obviously, New York's a big, you know, marked town. But, I mean, it's not like Cody isn't over there. You know what I mean?
Yep.
It's not like Cody isn't a big star. Like, he's going to get a big response no matter where he goes. And, obviously, the fact that his merch sold out is so big. You know, like, that's a huge indicator that this guy is over. And when he left, he was, in my opinion, undoubtedly the biggest babyface in the company. So, you know, obviously, you know, you're going to see people that are going to want something different and all this other stuff. And, you know, Sammy had this great interview with Ariel Helwani, which I recommend to all our listeners to check out. Very informative. Sammy's just an incredibly smart guy, has great awareness. You know, and he even said himself, yeah, I could be the champion. I could be that guy. I could go on, you know, Jimmy Fallon and, you know, laugh with him while he does his fake laugh and all this other stuff. But that's not who I am for the long term. You know, Roman Reigns is that guy. You know, Brock Lesnar is that guy. Even Bobby Lashley is that guy. You know what I'm saying? John Cena is that guy. You know, there's just certain guys that are built for that. And I think for him to have that kind of awareness is absolutely incredible. But, I mean, does he have the ability to be champion? Absolutely. But as far as it goes with being the face of the company, no. And he's aware of that. And a lot of guys wouldn't have that kind of awareness. And it goes to show you what an incredibly smart talent he is.
Oh, absolutely.
You know,
and, again, for according to published reports, he's going to have his chance to kind of be that main event guy, obviously, as, you know, unless there's like some last minute swerve or redo, he'll be challenging Roman in his hometown of Montreal, Quebec, Canada, at the Elimination Chamber PLE coming up. We'll see. It'll be interesting. But I think, you know, certainly, you know, getting back to these revenues and folks, you know, again, I don't want to sort of bore everyone with thinking I'm having class here and I'm teaching business 101 or business 102. But it's funny though, man, because don't marks get emboldened, Pat, about, oh, look at WWE and look how much money they're making. They can't afford to pay this, or they don't want to sign this person, or they release A, B, and C talents. Folks, again, this is not like, you know, business 103. But, yes, you're taking in $1.3 billion in 2022. Yes, the highest revenues you've ever collected. Folks, also, let's keep in mind, and again, I'm not saying it's a large portion of the operating budget, but this is a product that's expensive to produce. Okay, you got to transport people week to week. You got truck. I mean, you got probably dozens of trucks that are driving interstate roads all across this country to get to arenas, rain or shine, whatever. You got expert staff having to set up these stages, make sure that all this expensive audio and video equipment is working. You know, it's not like watching AEW where mics seem to fail every other week or every week exactly, and promos are like stained by having mics that don't work. Folks, it's an expensive product to produce. I'm not saying it's half of their cost that they take in, but folks, you know, think about paying employees. I mean, if you think about maybe $100, at worst $200 million in salaries for talent that isn't even ring related. So yes, it's a great revenue stream. They're making money. They're making profit. They're not in the red. They're not kind of breaking even here, folks. You know, this isn't 1986 where Vince McMahon maybe was breaking even, okay, and trying to stay afloat here, okay? This is a company that is making stupid profits. And, folks, the Rumble, obviously, from what we read, highest gross. I hate to use the word gross because ticket sales are misleading in terms of the money. But highest ticket attendance for a Royal Rumble, it beat the previous two times to win the Alamo Dome in 1997 and 2007 for all you trivia buffs out there. I mean, they had to add seats. So WWE starting off 2023 really well financially. You know the Bell Center in Montreal is going to be electric for Roman versus Sami Zayn. And we know that SoFi is sold out. And we know that SoFi, we have plenty of weeks to talk about Mania, folks. But if the road to WrestleMania...
And they've only announced two matches.
Yep.
They've only announced
right.
two official matches, Fern. You know what I mean? Like, come
yep.
on. Yeah.
So, again, the company is doing great financially to start. It ended 2022 beautifully, and it started off 2023 royally. I'm sure for the rest of this year, they're going to continue making stupid bank. Pat, a little interesting here. The Marks got, I think, they got a little food thrown on their plate this week. Sean Ross Sapp, interesting, made its way around Twitter and everything else. Apparently, being reported that according to the pay service on Fightful.com, why you would pay for this is beyond me. But then again, people spend money unnecessarily on a lot of dumb things. But according to Sean Ross Sapp this week, quote, the WWE Royal Rumble was much easier without Vince McMahon around. That's the title of the article, this nonsense. WWE's 2023 Royal Rumble event meant more than just producing a new show for Triple H. He's been responsible for massive events before. But there's something special about this year's Royal Rumble and everything that comes after that. Vince McMahon returned to WWE caused a lot of fear that the company's career direction might change. But it turns out that Triple H has a handle on things, and thankfully, and Sean never misses a moment to take a jab at people, and thankfully, Triple H has a handle on things. Reporting Vince McMahon was not spotted at all anywhere around the Alamo Dome on this past Saturday. His creative influence, again, he says, thankfully, was also not felt during the show. In the end, the WWE had a very good feeling about the show. This included the backstage morale and how Triple H is putting everything together. It's also known that the entire process was the easiest that it's ever been in a long time without having to deal with Vince McMahon. I'll tell you, Sean Ross Sapp loves to give the Marks a little food on their plate, doesn't he?
I mean, whatever, dude. They're a bunch of fucking virgins. Who really gives a rat's ass what these fucking dorks think? You know, and even if they're not virgins, what the fuck do they know about running a wrestling company? What do they know about booking? You dirtbags only know what you like, okay? You don't know shit. And if it wasn't for fucking Vince, there wouldn't be an event to produce. So, you know, suck it, all right? Fucking suck it. Because, you know, it's kind of corny now at this point with this dude. It really is, because it's like, what do you got to talk about Vince for? Like, why do you keep got to bringing up Michael Myers? Like, I understand he is the Michael Myers to the wrestling community's Laurie Strode, but he's gone now. He's gone now, okay? It's Halloween Ends for you guys, all right? They you know, incinerated him. They mashed him up into tiny little pieces. He's gone. The boogeyman can't hurt you anymore. And yet they still feel the fucking need to talk about him nonstop. And it's absolutely ridiculous. So, I mean, I could give three drops of piss about what Sean Ross Sapp says because I understand what the guy does. I know what he does. It's not for me. For the people that like it, more power to you, man. You know what I'm saying? Enjoy it. Keep paying your $12 to listen to the same redundant commentary. It's perfectly fine. But... No, I'm not terribly surprised about this, and, you know, whatever, man. More chatter from a dude who has no clue about what the business is truly about at all. Like, gets, like, just doesn't get it and just wants to continue to play to his little fucking fan base. So, there you go. Do you think, Sean Ross Sapp?
It's amazing, and we've talked about this off the air, that the fandom that people have for Sean Ross Sapp and what they're willing to pay Fightful, right, the premium service, is interesting. I think we talked about it off the air, too. The same thing with Meltzer and the Wrestling Observer newsletter. I mean, we're talking about subscribers, you know, somewhere between $9.99 to $11.99 a month. You know, and just to put in perspective here, again, you know, per month, and I was doing some research here, as I always like to do research on everything. I mean, we're talking about, you know, 91, supposedly, 91,000 subscribers is what the Wrestling Observer newsletter is boasting. Well, let's just say it for the sake of argument, you know, all of them kind of gets a premium or maybe the middle of the road. We're still talking about $1,905,000 a month is what Meltzer brings in for that newsletter. You know, over the cost of a year, I mean, folks, we're talking about like literally almost $20 million, if we give or take. That's a lot of money for information that, quite frankly, doesn't have a lot of validity. We all know the credibility he's lost. You know, I'm sure this will piss off some fans here. I mean, listen, folks, there's something for everybody. You know, again, you know, you want to pay $12 a month for dirt sheet writing, God bless you. You know, there are people that watch MSNBC and CNN for free or watch it in airports. Doesn't mean it's good. But I guess everybody, you know, everybody has their own brand of vodka, Pat. But in the wrestling community and dirt sheets, it's astounding to see these guys still have a following and charging money. I mean, you want to talk about people stealing money. I don't know. I mean, you know, if the FBI is interested in people stealing money, go look at Dave Meltzer or Sean Ross Sapp. I mean, you could argue they're stealing money.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and to your point, you know, people will pay to watch and listen to those aforementioned networks. People will pay to listen to Tucker Carlson, even though his own network says that really none of what he's saying is true and it's all entertainment. People will pay to listen to this, and they'll watch it, and they'll make it a high-rated program because they either want to get mad or they want to get their fix, one or the other. But there's plenty of people that are ripping people off with bullshit commentary. And, you know, SRS and Meltzer and Alvarez, they're no different. But, you know, I think anybody who's got a brain in their head can read between the lines and can see what's actually going on. And I think anybody who's not an immense mark to the point where they're blind with hatred for WWE can truly understand what they're doing and why they're the best at what they do.
No, I'm with you. And it's really astounding that, again, to your great point about Michael Myers or the Boogeyman or, you know, Jason Voorhees, who apparently, you know, his childhood is going to be featured in a series on Peacock, I believe, later on this. Oh, maybe that'll have 125 ads during that series. But you're right, the Boogeyman is always a favorite target for the marks. And it seems like Vince just lives rent-free in a lot of people's heads. And it's unfortunate that people buy into it still. You know, one thing is, you know, if you're a young mark and you don't know about the business, you don't read, you don't watch shoot interviews. I'm not saying that that's the end-all be-all, but it's amazing, like you said, to still have this Boogeyman that you look at and find a way to vilify. It's just, it's sad. But, I mean, I think a large portion of the wrestling community tends to be sad. I know that's a little judgmental on my part and your part, but I think it's the truth, for sure.
It's very accurate.
Other things in the news cycle this week, though, man, again, speculation, but thus far, you just alluded to, two matches confirmed for WrestleMania coming up this April at SoFi Stadium in Inglewood, California, Southern California, their home of, you know, what used to be the Showtime Lakers in the late 80s. SoFi obviously going to have quite a gathering of people that weekend on April 1st and April 2nd. It's scheduled as of now, Roman Reigns versus Cody Rhodes for the WWE Undisputed Universal Championship. Rhea Ripley, and we'll get to her in a minute, will be challenging Charlotte Flair for the SmackDown Women's Championship. Bianca Belair will face the winner of the Raw Women's Elimination Chamber match. Listen, credit to Adam Pearce. I don't like that authority figure nonsense, that role, that gimmick. But credit to him. He was rolling off names for the chamber matches and the qualifying matches. Like, bro, doing this off memory, God bless you, bro. I'm impressed. I don't like Adam Pearce. I think, you know, I mean, it's clear Stevie Wonder dresses him with some of these suits he's wearing. But a great character, obviously, on air for that. And apparently another rumor matches as well, Pat. John Cena versus Austin Theory is heavily rumored. No idea yet whether or not it'll be for the United States Championship. since Austin Theory will be defending the U.S. Championship, the coveted United States Heavyweight Championship in the Elimination Chamber match, and also hotly rumored Io Sky, my girl, and Dakota Kai will defend the WWE Women's Tag Team Championship against Ronda Rousey and Shayna Baszler. Those are the, so far, two confirmed matches, two very likely matches. Your thoughts, Pat?
First of all, Scrap Iron Adam Pearce, former NWA World Champion, is law and order in the WWE, and I think he dresses amazing. I mean, what would you rather have him do? Just wear some t-shirt and then put a suit over it, you know? That's just lazy. That's absolutely lazy to do something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. for you know, I mean, I, honestly, at least the guy wears a suit, a tie, you know? He looks mm-hmm. professional. I mean, wearing a suit with just a t-shirt? I mean, who does that? That looks awful. But Scrap Iron does a great job, and obviously he's got a great memory, being an NWA World Champion, having to remember all those spots in the ring, you know? I mean, that's no easy feat. But yeah, I mean, I think the matches are going to be stacked. I think they're pretty darn awesome. And we'll see, you know, whether those matches actually end up happening. I know that those matches are rumored right now.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we'll see whether they could get confirmed or not. I mean, the only reason I'm skeptical is because of the guy who reported it. It was Dave Meltzer. So
yeah.
You got to kind of take that with a grain of salt, but we'll see. We'll see what happens. If that is the case, I think that'll be a really solid match. Shayna obviously has a great history with both of those wrestlers. Ronda, obviously, working with Shayna is going to be really, really good for her. And I think Ronda getting into a tag team could maybe, you know, breathe a little life into her. We'll see from there. But look, at the end of the day, anything better than the Iconics winning the tag titles, right?
Hey, I was there live for that here in 2019 at WrestleMania 35. That stadium popped, okay? And that's not noise being filtered in. That building exploded
uh-huh.
when they won. So I was there. I have the video.
It exploded.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have to go on Peacock to watch the replay with 57 ads in it. I have the videos because I sat there.
How'd that rain work out for them? How many title defenses did they have?
Well, listen, they weren't booked to my liking the way I would have booked them, but again, that's just my opinion. So
Because they were the shit. That's
you
why.
It'll be interesting, though, if that is, again, one of the rumor matches. Not that it has to be a face versus heel team. It can be two heels. It can be two faces. It doesn't really matter. I think.
Yeah.
Again, folks, kayfabe. Kayfabe, for all intents and purposes, is on life support for a lot of people, but I don't think that's a variable that we have to really, really worry about. In other news, moving to a more credible dirt sheet writers, Billy Body, I know, was talking recently with Disco Inferno and Conan. And I have to say, I try to listen to a lot of different shows, Pat. I mean, there's only so many hours in a week. I'm at the office, and I can only listen to things with my AirPods. But, you know, I enjoy Keeping It 100. I love that show. I think it's funny. I think there's a good balance between Conan and Disco Inferno. I love listening to Bischoff with Conrad. I love listening to Jeff Jarrett with Conrad, Ric Flair with Conrad, Jim Cornette with the I don't like the name The Great Brian Last. I don't know what's great about that guy, but that's another story. But Billy Body, I would argue, the most credible, if only credible, dirt sheet writer that's available right now for pro wrestling fans. Apparently telling, I'm just looking at my notes here. I'm sort of paraphrasing, but it seems that Rocky Dwayne Johnson, apparently there's no scheduling conflict. There's nothing he has to train for right now. It seems like he's more than willing to participate, but I think the one variable holding back his return is that Dwayne probably more as PR people, because that's what he pays them for, is skeptical about what's going on with WWE, whether it's the sale and or any further allegations that might come out about Vince McMahon. We know that two new lawsuits were filed against Vince McMahon, not along sexual harassment lines, but more along, monetary lines because of the stock and everything, the shareholders doing that. It seems like Billy Body's reporting that really what's holding Rock back from participating here isn't his schedule. It's not, oh, he can't get into ring shape. I think it's more as PR people are concerned about maybe being attached again to WWE because of the circumstances. That's what I got out of the interview there.
Absolutely. I think that, you know, you gotta understand where he's coming from here, okay? He doesn't want to have any type of stains on him. He's worked pretty hard to shed the wrestler image, even though there's a ton of people that still know him as The Rock, okay? But he's worked really, really hard to kind of shed that label, to become a top guy in Hollywood.
I'll let you finish. I'm sorry. But that hasn't really harmed Cena, per se. I mean, that really hasn't harmed John Cena. I mean, yes, there's that stench that maybe one can carry being a pro wrestler, but it hasn't really, I mean, again, they're two different entities and two different actors and two different individuals.
Right.
But to be fair, from going from filming which by the way, the first Marine was not a bad film per se. I know people like to shit on it. It wasn't a bad film. Robert Patrick was a great.
Wasn't a good one.
Great villain. Yeah, I thought it was fine. I thought it was a good movie. If it's on TV, I'll watch it. I won't sit there glued to my TV, but I'll have it on in the background. But John Cena's been doing Fast and Furious. He's going to be in the new Fast and Furious, which comes out this summer. He's in that show. Damn it, it's a DC show on HBO.
Peacemaker.
Exactly. It's not like John, you know, he was in Bumblebee, the spinoff of the Transformers franchise. It's not like being a pro wrestler has kind of damaged John per se, where, you know, he still comes back and he did SummerSlam last year against Roman Reigns. He spent the better part of the summer, you know, promoting that match. Better part of August, not the whole summer. But he spent a better part of August promoting that match with Roman Reigns. I don't know, man. It just seems like, you know, he came back for the SmackDown, the final SmackDown of 2022. I don't know. It just seems like it hasn't harmed John. John seems to like coming back and making these little sporadic appearances. I don't know. Maybe it's two different people. Maybe it's two different scenarios. But I don't think that's really harmed John.
Yeah.
I don't know why it would harm Dwayne. I don't think it would harm Dwayne.
Well, I mean, that's a fair point. But, I mean, John didn't want to come back to face Austin Theory when he was supposed to, which I believe was supposed to happen either at WrestleMania, if I'm not mistaken. Not this past SummerSlam. I think it was the SummerSlam before that he wrestled Roman, right? 21?
21, yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so he was supposed to come back at 22 to take on Theory, or Austin Theory. And, you know, that never ended up happening because of the situation with Vince and the allegations, right? And Cena came back for his 20th anniversary because he was scheduled to. He did the last one for 2022 because, from what I understand, he was scheduled to do that. So those appearances, he was 1,000% scheduled to do. Now, supposedly what Body said was the reason he didn't come back at SummerSlam to face Theory was because of an insurance issue with the Peacemaker, with the show. So I think it was something where, you know, he wouldn't have been insured or some sort of issue with his insurance that conflicted with what WWE wanted him to do. So obviously he's making a ton of money doing the Peacemaker. That's also, I want to say a richer road to go down, you know what I'm saying? A more fruitful road to go down than just doing these one shots, which I'm sure he's making good money off of. But Dwayne and Cena are in different phases of their career, you know, as far as it goes with acting. You know, Dwayne's moved on. Dwayne's into production now. You know, Dwayne's doing a variety of different things that Cena might not do or hasn't done yet. So I could see how it's a little bit more complicated for Dwayne. Plus, you know, John Cena's a mainstream name, but Dwayne Johnson is a big-time mainstream name. I mean, like, he's a mainstream name, you know? When I see young Cena, then I'll be like, okay, he's big. When John Cena has a production company, then I'll say, okay, he's as big as The Rock. But right now, The Rock is bigger than John Cena at this point in time in Hollywood. So I just think that with Rocky, he's got a lot more to lose than, let's say, Cena. You know, because if he goes and he works with them and, you know, these allegations and all this stuff are hanging over him, that's going to negatively affect his production company because some people might have reservations about working with him, you know, or working with his production company because of stuff like that. And look, you know, all that stuff, I understand what it is. You understand what it is. But there are people out there that are deeply bothered by it, and it's enough of a reason for them to not want to work with Dwayne or not want to be associated with WWE in any type of manner. So, you know, I think we kind of have to take a look at all the sides here when it comes to that. But again, you know, let's take this with a grain of salt right now. I obviously, you know, I believe what Body says more often than not, but I mean, you got to think that they have to try and work the dirt sheet somewhat, that they can't just fully reveal their hands just yet. And
sure.
Body, you know, did mention while he was on that, you know, episode of Keeping It 100 that he does believe that Rocky will be at WrestleMania. So how they get there, you know, when we get there, that remains to be seen. But he does believe that The Rock will be there. So, you know, I'm gonna kind of side with Body on this one, but I do kind of see all the other parties and where they're coming from in this situation.
I'm with you, and I think it's gonna be very interesting to see again. We're a couple of weeks away from Elimination Chamber in Montreal, where we, I think, obviously, you know, we'll start seeing the seeds being planted about Roman versus Sammy. Obviously, we started seeing that already. It'll be interesting to see for sure where Rock fits into all this, because again, what have we been hearing, or what was the rumor? Oh, Rock versus Reigns at WrestleMania in Hollywood. Rocky passes the torch to Reigns, the last member of the family that he hasn't beaten, or whatever. However you want to paint this storyline, I think it'll be interesting for sure. But again, you know, God bless Billy Body, a guy who gets his sources, gets his information out there, and for whatever reason, I would say is the most credible guy right now in pro wrestling. Next to, you know, Keller, who I sometimes have issues with sometimes with his reporting. But Billy Body just, he seems to be in the know, and that's for sure. Some ratings here. I'll talk, Pat, a little bit here, breaking down the numbers. Interesting, this past week, Raw dipped a little bit, 2.1 this week. Down from the previous week, 2.3. Here's some numbers for the rest of January. January 16th was 1.4. January 9th was 1.6. January 2nd was 1.605. Strong numbers. Again, it's the road to WrestleMania. It was interesting because some of the dirt sheet was like, oh, after this Royal Rumble, well, if it was so good, why was Raw down? You know, it went from 2.3 to 2.1. Folks, the people bitching and moaning about this are the same people that watch indie wrestling. So it's I find it funny this week watching the free versions on YouTube of Meltzer and Alvarez and, every, you know, the Brian and Vinny show with Johnny, Jimmy, James, Jake, Joey, and Jumbo talking about, well, you know, hey, Raw went down. Wasn't this the greatest Royal Rumble ever? Well, why did it go from 2.3 to 2.1? Still in the twos. It's like, folks, really? It's the road to WrestleMania. You'll see numbers in the twos from here on in. NFL season's over. There's no college football. Yeah, the Bachelor's on Mondays, but that's not a big deal. Not too many other shows on Mondays. Folks, it's the road to WrestleMania. You'll be seeing two somethings for the foreseeable future. If not, maybe close to three.
Yeah, absolutely. And here's another thing that these guys didn't take into consideration. The Royal Rumble ended, and again, we'll talk about it later, with one of the hottest angles, if not the hottest angle in the business. You know, I would say peaking for sure, and having another twist in that storyline. And everybody knew that they were not going to be, the Bloodline that is, were not going to be on Raw. They were going to be on SmackDown. So I think a good chunk, or at least, you know, that 0.3, I guess, if you will, they knew that they weren't going to be on SmackDown, that they weren't going to be on Raw. So obviously, you know, they weren't going to tune in because there are people that specifically just watch it for that. Regardless of that fact, it's still 2 million people. AEW can't get 2 million people. You know what I'm saying? And they're such an amazing wrestling program with all this amazing wrestling and all these guys are putting on bangers every week and blah, 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 blah. They barely break a million on average. So, I mean, again, just being petty, you know, finding any little thing to nitpick. We get it. You guys hate WWE. You're never going to like it. That's fine. That's fine. But be honest. Be intellectually honest. There you go. I borrowed one from you there. Be intellectually honest. And, you know, tell the truth about things, because you know, you understand, and they do understand, what the business model is of WWE and what they're trying to accomplish and where they're going with this. So, you know, until AEW gets 2 million, you know, good luck with that. But don't talk shit about WWE, because WWE is producing better television than AEW has in their entire existence.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Speaking of AEW, big drop this week, down to 901,000. Last week's was 1 million, 1.003. I think it's fair to say that the Jay Briscoe, knowing the Jay Briscoe tribute match was going to take place between his brother Mark and Jay Lethal, another Ring of Honor legend, was going to get traffic for sure. But here are the numbers for the rest of January, Pat. January 18th, 969,000. January 11th, 967,000. And to start off the year, 864,000. Again, a lot of back and forth. Not a great Dynamite this week, 901,000. I mean, I watch it every week. You had Darby Allin and Samoa Joe in a no-holds-barred match. I mean, Jesus. A lot of unnecessary bumps by Darby Allin. What else is new? Certainly the Elite on television set up for their match this week on Rampage to defend the World Six-Man Championships. Dynamite started off in Dayton, Ohio with Hangman versus John Moxley. Back and forth match. They beat the shit out of each other. What else is new? I'm just trying to think of what else I missed from Wednesday off the top of my head. Yes, announcing that you know, Tony Storm and Saraya will be in tag team action this week on Rampage. Take that sentence however you will. And of course, Jade Cargo got to win number 50 this week, defeating Red Velvet. Again, entertaining Dynamite. Nothing that I'm gonna be, oh my God, Pat, you gotta watch this. Yeah, you know, the typical crazy bumps and all that, and some bad backstage segments. But again, these numbers aren't great for it, for what really is indie wrestling, Patrick.
Well, yeah. I mean, again, like, it's a hard-to-swallow pill for Tony Khan and for that contingent of fans, but, I mean, it's not for everyone. And casuals are not willing to check it out. Now, I don't know if you saw, but there was an interesting interview that came out with Bryan Danielson, where he was talking about how Vince McMahon in 2020 had called him and had asked him, hey, what do they do better than we do? What does AEW do better? Meaning, like, what does AEW do better than WWE? And Danielson had told him, okay, let me get back to you. So while he was on paternity leave, you know, from AEW, he had watched literally every bit of AEW content that he could watch. And he had told Vince that WWE is like a wrestling program without a lot of wrestling, you know? It's a wrestling program that doesn't have a lot of wrestling. And that is true to some extent. That is absolutely true. But what WWE does better than AEW is hook the mainstream audience, no pun intended with the hook, but hook the mainstream audience and hook casuals into the big storylines that they produce. You know, the Bloodline is a prime example. You know, there was wrestling in that entire duration of this Bloodline angle. There's been wrestling. There's been great wrestling. There's been fantastic matches from Roman Reigns, from the Usos, from Solo. You know, just the whole crew, even Sammy. It's all been fantastic stuff. But what really sticks out and what really drives the numbers is the storytelling. And that's the big thing. That's where AEW truly lacks, because AEW has these characters that they're like, yeah, we got this guy. Look at him. Isn't he great? And then he goes in there and he does a bunch of flippity-dippity moves. And then they'll have him, you know, kind of cut a backstage promo. And, you know, the guy has the charisma of a brick wall. You know, it's just like nobody wants to listen to him. And nobody is going to get interested in these characters or invested in these characters if you don't give them a reason to give a shit about them. You know what I mean? So, you know, I think, you know, and to Danielson's point, I will say that WWE could do with a little bit more wrestling. They could. They could. But I think the reason why their product works so well is because they tell those stories to get to the wrestling, whereas AEW tells no story and they just wrestle. They just get to the wrestling. And, you know, there's a story, but it's like a tiny little, like, bullshit strung together half-assed story, you know? And it's like by chance, if there's like a coincidence where, like, these two guys had a backstage segment and they wrestled each other 3 months down the line, then the AEW fans like to call that long-term storytelling. But it's not. It's not, dude. It's not because it's poorly produced. It makes no sense. And it's just a wrestling program. So, you know, again, like these numbers, all this stuff you're telling me, I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised. And I've said it before and I'll say it again and I'll say it till I'm blue in the friggin' face. Tony Khan needs to start getting more people invested in characters. He needs to stop giving them all this wrestling for free, all this good wrestling for free. And he needs to get people invested in characters because then and only then will his product be able to grow. I mean, look, everybody can criticize Impact all they want, and Impact's had their fair share of mistakes. But what Impact did, that WWE did, that helped make them successful and helped get them to the 2 million mark, by the way. So for all you people out there that want to throw shade at Impact or throw shade at TNA, TNA was pulling 2 million viewers. AEW has not done that. Okay? Sure. It has not done that. And a big part of why TNA was able to do that was because TNA was able to get people invested in the characters, able to get people invested in the storylines. And more importantly, they used established stars in the business the right way. So, again, I feel like, you know, I'm beating a dead horse here, but Tony Khan's got to figure it the fuck out, man, because otherwise those numbers are going to continue to dip lower and lower and lower and lower. And all the cheap heat in the world isn't going to make people stick around consistently to watch it. So, you know, we'll see what happens, but I don't see this trend changing anytime soon, Fern. I really don't.
I'm with you. I'm with you. I don't see that trend changing either, especially when, for all intents and purposes, you would think that, you know, the road to Revolution coming up in March the 3rd, in, you know, from the Chase Center in downtown San Francisco, that, Jesus Christ, you would think that you kind of want to raise the temperature a little bit here. You want to get some interest going into that pay-per-view where, again, you know, you're having Danielson jump through all these hoops to finally challenge MJF. And again, just an example of Tony Khan's bad booking where, okay, you want to set up, again, another long, drawn-out MJF feud where he's making his opponent jump through hoops to finally face him at a pay-per-view. Okay, well, you can do that, but you can do that without revealing the stipulation of the match. Okay, sure, Danielson will pick the stipulation if he wins all the if he succeeds at the obstacle course, pretty much, this is what it is. Okay, but don't just say, oh, yeah, well, guess what? If you're going to – if you win, then you pick the match. Okay, great. Pick it later, maybe end of February, closer to the pay-per-view. Don't pick the stipulation in January. I mean, not to say it deflates the main event, but, okay, it's going to be a 60-man Ironman match. All right, well – and what possibly will be a 5-6 hour pay-per-view. 1 hour is dedicated to one match. So not the best booking, and I think that's why AEW continues to do poorly. SmackDown, since January, here's some numbers here. January 6th, 2.257 million. January 13th, 2.326. January 20th, 1.257. Last weekend going into the Rumble, literally the day before, 2.544. Pat, I think obviously after what happened last weekend, and we'll get to that in just a moment, certainly it'll be a very interesting SmackDown, the first SmackDown in February after what happened. I'm sure that number, I would venture to say, again, and we'll find out next week when we look at the numbers, but don't be surprised, folks, if this SmackDown coming up, you know, is close to 3 million. I think there's a lot of intrigue. A lot of fans are going to tune in to this week's SmackDown to see the fallout from last week's Royal Rumble. Don't be surprised if it's cracking 3 when we look at the numbers next week, Pat.
I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, again, it's the hottest angle in the business. You've got top stars in it. You know, people are going to tune in. The anticipation is there. I mean, I'm anticipating it. I can't wait. You know, it's going to be something big. And again, we're on the road to WrestleMania. These stories are going to start to peak anytime soon. And everything leading up to WrestleMania is going to be hot, including that pay-per-view when it does, or the PLE when it does happen. You know, you're going to have Sammy Montreal Boy taking on Roman. Place is going to go nuts. You know how Canada is for their heroes, especially in Montreal, you know. And, you know, Kevin, too, another guy, another Montreal guy who's going to also be involved and is going to be a big part of that show. So, yeah, I mean, I'm absolutely looking forward to it. I would not be surprised if they crack over 3 million. And, again, Tony Khan, if by chance you listen to this, because I know he listens to, you know, Mark fan stuff, you know, whatever you want to call our program, wrestling programs. He listens to this kind of stuff, and he cares. He cares about what they say. You know, take a look at what they're doing on SmackDown and borrow a little bit from that. He doesn't have to totally, you know, be a carbon copy of the WWE as far as storytelling and stuff like that goes, but take the people that you're trying to push that you think have potential to be stars and make them matter. Make them matter. Because you had a guy like Wardlow, who to me, again, was money, and you flushed him down the drain because you didn't make people care about him anymore. You know? So if he could just at least learn something from that, you know, then try and take a different approach. But I just, again, I don't see that happening. So, yeah, I would not be surprised if SmackDown cracks 3 million. Absolutely. Would not be surprised.
Yeah. Not I would be surprised either. And the reason potentially, folks, that SmackDown could crack 3 million this week certainly is due to our main event here this week and on Work in the Marks, brought to you once again by Famcast Media. Folks, the 2023 Royal Rumble took place last Saturday night at the Alamo Dome in downtown San Antonio. Great venue. The third time in the history of the Royal Rumble that it took place in that building. Certainly, as we talked about previously on this program, largest gate in terms of attendance for a Royal Rumble in San Antonio. They had to even add seats, I think, probably the day of or the week of, because ticket sales, I think, were looking at 40,000 and or so and change. I think WWE realized that the interest was so overwhelming for this Rumble event and added, I think, X amount of seats. I think it cracked over 50-something thousand in attendance. I mean, folks, the Royal Rumble, my favorite event of the year, obviously. It's unpredictable. It's fun. You get people over. The anticipation, the surprise of the entrance. I think it was a great, great event, certainly last Saturday on Peacock. And again, folks, I know Pat gets on me for being cheap because I don't want to pay the extra $5 for, you know, removing the ads when I'm watching old pay-per-views. But Jesus Christ, I have to fucking watch ads during an actual live PLE too? I mean, can I watch a PLE in less than 3 hours without 10 ads during a PLE? For God's sakes. I mean, Jesus Christ.
How is that different from before? How is that different from before? When they would take breaks to promote freaking Stridex, or when they would take breaks in the middle of the show to promote AOL or to promote all this other stuff. I mean, like, why are we acting like this is the first time they've had commercials in the middle of the PLE?
It wasn't as pervasive. I had a lot of time on my hands this week. I went back and watched a couple of PLEs, old pay-per-views, and I looked at, okay, because we talked off the air about this, and I said, okay, maybe Pat's got
a
point here.
But it also wasn't a publicly traded company back then. It also wasn't a publicly traded company back then. And
no,
they have way more sponsorship money now than they ever did before.
No, but Pat, I wasn't going back to the
Attitude Era.
No, but Pat, I wasn't going back to the Attitude Era. I was going back to just 10 years ago. Like, forget about Attitude Era. I'm talking about 10 years ago, where I'd already been a publicly traded company since 03 or whatever it was. I'm like, I went back and watched the Royal Rumble in 2010, where Edge came back and won it. I was like, one ad the entire 3 hours. I'm like, that's great.
That's good, but that's a lifetime ago. 2010 is like a lifetime ago. That's like forever ago now.
I know.
You know what I'm saying? Like we're in the roaring 20s now, okay?
I just like to raise objections to things. That's all. I just like to object to things.
When you're watching The Bachelor, do you complain about the commercials then? Because there's way more commercials there, you know?
Yeah, but that's
it's network television, but geez Louise.
Well,
I get all that, but I mean,
I'm just making observations. I just like to raise objections, as you know. So, and that's putting it mildly, I think, to say the least.
Wait a minute. Hold on a second. Is this
sure?
Is this the Mountain Dew Pitch Black section of the show? Is this because now I want to get sponsorship. I want to get Soda to sponsor us. You know, La Donita.
I want Cortaditos to sponsor this program.
Definitely, Cortaditos. And shout out to the Cortaditos and all the lovely ladies there that serve me my coffee. You are
absolutely
very much appreciated.
Absolutely, absolutely. Smoke shows all around, folks. Check out Cortaditos in Union City. A little free plug there. Pat, good PLE. Interesting, starting up with the Men's Royal Rumble. I think it was, again, very entertaining. Obviously, having Gunther enter at number one, the reigning, defending Intercontinental Heavyweight Champion. I think a great start to the prestigious
Intercontinental
Champion.
More prestigious than the U.S. title.
That's fine. Gunther certainly starting off at number one. Not a lot of surprises in terms of entrance. Yes, it was great to see Booker T. Enter the Rumble match. That's always great for nostalgia purposes. I mean, folks, I'll take Booker T entering the Rumble as opposed to listening to Booker T on commentary any day of the week, as far as I'm concerned. So you're not going to hear a complaint from me, folks, seeing Booker T wrestle. That's for sure. Interesting to see, obviously, you know, we were sort of waiting for Cody to enter. No surprise there. Number 30, the lights go out, you know, Kingdom plays. You know, a great entrance for a returning hero. Without a doubt, obviously, Seth Rollins' entrance was interesting. Looking at, again, just a great, great Rumble. You know, interesting, once again, that it started with the men's. That's very rare that it ever starts with the men's. But a good way, I think, to kick off the show. The match did not drag at all. The final two was number 30. And number one, and I know that, of course, to the victor go the spoils, and of course we always remember the winners of the Royal Rumbles, but oftentimes we forget about the final fours or even the remaining, the runner up. I mean, my goodness, ladies and gentlemen, if Gunther has not convinced you of how an immense talent he is, from everything he's gone through, from changing his appearance to just the subtle things that make this guy a draw. Despite people maybe not thinking he is, which you have to be blind to not see it. A men's Rumble match. Again, not too many surprise entrants, but I think very, very well produced. And Cody winning the Rumble, thus getting the title shot at WrestleMania. A good match overall, man. It's very rare that I ever watch a Royal Rumble match and say, oh my God, what a stinker this was. I can't remember ever watching one that was really bad.
No, not too many off the top of my head. Obviously, Gunther sticks out. And to your point, I mean, what a workhorse this guy's becoming. Not just, in the ring, but I mean, outside of the ring, doing all the right things, challenging himself, improving physically, and you could tell the guy just has a great attitude, which it seems like is lacking quite a lot in a lot of wrestlers these days. But just a dude who's just committed to really become a star. And for me, I think it was a breakout moment for him. I mean, he showed his abilities as a talent. I believe he set the Royal Rumble record now for longest time in the Rumble. He actually broke the record.
Yes, an hour 24 minutes, according to my
unbelievable.
I saw here.
Unbelievable stuff, you know, and you know, to your point, it didn't drag. Obviously, seeing Booker T was great, you know, hit the spin-a-rooney and all that stuff. That was awesome. The Jake Paul ricochet spot with the double springboard, double clotheslines. My God. And look, let me tell you, Logan Paul, Logan Paul, what a talent this guy is. I know there's a lot of people out there that hate him. He doesn't belong in the business and all this stuff. I mean, look, the dude has it all. He has a huge following. He's got a look. He could talk a line of shit. You know, he checks off all the boxes for what the WWE want. More importantly, to me, it seems like he's a guy that really respects the business, that respects the boys and the girls, and respect is something that goes a long way in wrestling, okay? That I can tell you, especially backstage. But for this guy to have the timing to be able to do what he did, Ricochet, I'm not surprised, because Ricochet is one of the best talents in the world, one of the best acrobatic, you know, guys out there in the biz. I mean, just the way he consistently lands things and does things, just phenomenal talent. But for those two guys to be able to do that, and especially for Logan Paul, who's still pretty green in the business, to be able to do that and get that timing down for a bump like that, it was amazing. And that definitely popped the crowd huge. Cody, you knew he was going to win. It was just a matter of time when he came out. But the reaction was great. And I love how he really gave Gunther a lot of good heat. You know, you could see his chest look like hamburger meat afterwards. But definitely a really solid rumble and a great way, in my opinion, to kick off the show, albeit a little unorthodox, you know, for a Royal Rumble.
Absolutely. Moving on, we had the pitch black match. And, you know, Cornette and Laz talked about the Royal Rumble press conference afterwards, which is very different than the AEW media scrums, because they kind of just get the talent in and out. Very brief. It seems like they have fans and some journalists in the press area asking questions. It's kind of interesting, not like the AEW media scrums. But, you know, bro, I have to tell you, this match, I was not excited about this match. I think, sure, the Raw the week of, obviously, with the 30th anniversary, celebrating Raw, having The Undertaker show up, you know, kind of get himself involved in the angle with LA Knight and Bray Wyatt, I think was a little bit of a breath of fresh air to a feud that was getting very stale, an act that to me is getting very stale. And, you know, credit LA Knight, you know, came out, I think worked as best as he could. Very interesting with the fluorescent lighting. It almost seemed like I was at a, you know, I hate to date myself with this, like at a rave some years ago at Webster Hall. Or Limelight, or just, I don't know, Pasha on the west side. It just, the lighting was interesting. Obviously, as soon as you saw LA Knight's tights, you're like, uh-oh, okay, this is a dead giveaway. You saw Bray kind of with that Jeff Hardy makeup that you know with lighting is going to look even more sinister, which Jeff used to do a lot with his entrances. Not a long match, thankfully. Obviously, just, you know, Bray Wyatt winning. I think it was, believe it or not, dude, that match was under 5 minutes. Not something to brag about. Then, of course, LA Knight is being chased out of ringside by Bray Wyatt after he put on a new mask, completely different than the Fiend, completely different than anything else he's worn. He's chasing LA Knight, which to me is just, it's fucking bullshit. How do we suspend disbelief here? You know, LA Knight has a kendo stick. Okay, why are you running from a guy? Just beat the shit out of him with a kendo stick. But apparently he wasn't selling it. I guess that's the point. You know, they get up to some area in the bleachers. Bray Wyatt, I think, throws him onto an inflatable pad of some kind. Uncle Howdy is standing above him, gives him an elbow drop, like a Shane McMahon elbow drop, like he did once to Steve Blackman, completely misses him. I'm waiting for Botchamania this week or next week because you know they're going to show that. And then, of course, the puppets or the real-life puppets were standing above Uncle Howdy where he stood. What a fucking shit show, dude. Like, I'm sorry. Like, if this is the payoff of this feud, I'm sorry. As someone who grades for a living, if I could give a grade lower than an F, I would give it to this match. What a fucking clusterfuck this was.
I didn't hate it. I'm not going to lie. I thought it was interesting. To your point, I thought the makeup was interesting, that it was a different look for him. The fact that the match was short, I think, was good. It just, I mean, it's so difficult with Bray Wyatt. It really, really is, because it's like you don't want to kill certain characters. Like, you don't want to kill LA Knight, but it's really hard for people to work with him, and because of that character, kind of come out better. You know what I'm saying? It's very, very, very difficult. And I think, you know, look, at the end of the day, that's not for us. It's not. That's for kids. And it's for people who like Bray Wyatt and are Bray Wyatt fans. And we can sit here and we can criticize that match till the cows come home. And there's plenty to criticize. But at the end of the day, the guy's moving merch like crazy. And the guy's producing for them where it matters. So even if the match isn't particularly the greatest, he's still making them a lot of money. And I'm pretty sure that if they released figures of those puppets or Captain Howdy or whoever the heck it is, I'm pretty sure that those things would sell out and would do pretty well. But for as much as people might not like it, I think Bray Wyatt is immensely creative. I think he's a pretty fearless guy in the sense that, for better or worse, he's going to just try to do whatever the hell he wants, and he's going to try his best to get it over. And I think that he deserves some credit for that. I think that he certainly deserves some credit for his creativity and his fearlessness in that regard. But is it a match that I would watch again? No. Did I hate it? No. Again, I think it was interesting. I think the neon lights were interesting. I think that element was cool. The glow in the dark paint and stuff. It's a little muddy. The waters have been muddied a little bit with all these characters, I think, because we don't know who's who and what's what. But whether we like it or not, the guy produces where it matters. And I think he did what he needed to do in this match, you know?
Well, Pat, also too, to your point, I mean, just released this week, the metrics and the logistics of the top four merch sellers, and whether we like the storyline or not, whether we think it's getting stale, which I would argue it is, I mean, it's selling merch, selling masks, selling t-shirts, whatever you want to call it. And it's still over with the crowd. I'm a big LA Knight guy. I've loved him since his Eli Drake days back in Impact Wrestling. Not sure if he had a chance this week, but I caught it at work. The Van Vliet interview with LA Knight was really, really interesting. I did not know that the late, great Percy Pringle, a.k.a. Paul Bearer, was a manager of LA Knight. I did not know that. And one of the last appearances.
And Brian Cage.
And one of the last appearances that Percy Pringle made, I think, at an indie show was with Eli Drake. So nice to see Drake be very reflective in the interview. Again, folks, if you haven't checked it out, it's a really telling interview, again, with LA Knight. Chris Van Vliet does a great job. I think he's a great interviewer in the pro wrestling community. But if you haven't had a chance, check it out. It's only 30 minutes. I had a chance to watch it, you know. And again, it's interesting because he did one with Eli Drake 3 years ago, and that's when he was still in Impact Wrestling and soon to leave for NXT. So very interesting if you have a chance to watch both of them. But I don't know where LA Knight goes from here. He's still over, man. He's a great talent in the ring, great worker, great on the microphone. And I think he's a guy that does what he's told, does it well. I'm glad that They broke him out of that Max Dupree gimmick. I was not a fan of that at all. And I don't want to sound like one of these marks that, oh, I hate when Vince does this to people. I personally didn't like it. I liked that they just let him be LA Knight again. I think it's been a good presentation for him. I don't know where this goes from now. You think this is the payoff? I don't know. I'd like to think it is. Because, Jesus Christ, if I see a Hell in a Cell or a Last Man Standing, Pat, with these two, I'm telling you right now, I might just drink myself to sleep, dude.
Again, we don't know where it's going to go from here. We can only speculate. But whatever the guy does, you know, whether it says Max Dupree, which I thought he did a great job at. I mean, like, that dude really committed himself. He's a worker's worker. You know, this isn't a guy that's going to bellyache and complain, oh, you're not using me the right way. This is stupid. I'm not going to do it. Like, he does it. He does it. He puts his head down and he does it because he believes in himself and he believes in his ability as a worker. And he believes that if he's as good as he thinks he is, he can take anything and he can knock it out of the park. You know, to quote CM Punk, you know, he could take chicken shit and turn it into chicken salad. And he does that with everything he does. Whether it continues the feud from here or not, I don't know. We'll see. But, you know, again, like, Bray's making money. LA Knight, you know, there's a lot of potential for him. He's the guy that's going to continue to do his thing and do it very, very well. So, you know, I guess we'll just have to see where it goes from there. Do I want to see a rematch? No, not particularly. I'm not particularly thrilled about seeing a rematch for this matchup. So, you know, we'll see where it goes from here. But I didn't hate it, but I didn't love it. But I give Bray Wyatt a ton of credit for being a really creative guy.
I'm with you. And I think that, listen, again, he sells merch. It was funny, again, Cornette and Brian Last were kind of going in on how Bray Wyatt sounded during the press conference, where he said, you know, he was very pleased with the outcome of the match. He was very pleased with the presentation. And again, you know, Cornette and Last didn't like that, for example, and they weren't fans of the match itself. We'll see where it goes from here in terms of Bray Wyatt. Listen, folks, you know, he's getting a lot of chances that a lot of other talent wouldn't. And he's a talented guy. Let's find out what Paul continues to do with him again on the road to WrestleMania. As we know that, I'm sure he'll want to have him featured. Again, he's a top merch seller. So to not have him involved in some big spicy angle, I think would be a disservice to what I think they're trying to do with Bray Wyatt. So we'll see. In the Raw Women's Championship match, we have Bianca Belair defending against Alexa Bliss. Interesting though, man, it seems like they've been teasing this Alexa Bliss turn into going back with the Bray Wyatt fiendish character, the sinister girl with supernatural abilities. Interesting match. Again, not a match, you know. I have to admit this. Bianca Belair has grown on me, per se. She's an incredible worker, good promo. I don't like the gimmick. It's not for me, but it's not tailored for me, and I get that. I think a lot of marks struggle with understanding what gimmicks are tailored for them and what are tailored in general. Match was fine. Didn't hate it. I think it served its purpose. Obviously, I think that will end that feud. I don't know, since the Elimination Chamber match coming up will crown a new number one contender for her coming up at WrestleMania. But, you know, again, a good match. I'm not going to lie. I got up, went to the kitchen, poured myself a Guinness. Wasn't really interested in it. It was fine. Came back. I watched it. Not going to be overly critical of it.
It was, I mean, and look, again, not taking anything away from the two performers. You know, Bianca is a really talented performer. Alexa is a talented performer who's improved a lot over time. But the match just kind of felt like it was just like a technicality. Like, it was just like, okay, you know, let's just get it out of the way. It wasn't Bianca's best performance. It wasn't Alexa's best performance. It wasn't their worst one either. It was just kind of there. And I think it was a little bit of a flat match. It really, really was. The crowd didn't really seem too into it outside of the entrances. And obviously they're continuing to tease Alexa, you know, going back to, you know, joining up with Bray Wyatt again. So, you know, we'll just have to see where it goes. But all in all, wasn't the most exciting matchup.
To be fair, I mean, maybe not necessarily teaming with Bray, because if we all remember, folks, at WrestleMania in 2021, I mean, she came out during that feud, which, again, I did not like the booking of that match between Orton and The Fiend, but she came out and she continued with that gimmick, not gothic gimmick, I'm trying to think of the right word here, just the supernatural, evil, twisted, psychotic girl on a swing. So I think she can go back to doing that without having to link up again with Bray Wyatt. I think we're past the Firefly Funhouse thing, which I know that's where she kind of, you know, got into that, was a big part of it. I think if they're going to re-explore this angle with her and this gimmick where she turns evil and has supernatural powers and has these eyes and is like, you know, all that other stuff. I mean, I think she can still do it independently of Bray. That's just my opinion, because we saw it play itself out after WrestleMania in Tampa last year. It was 2 years ago, excuse me. So, again, I think that, you know, there's still room to milk this character for Alexa if they want to explore that.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, I don't think it would hurt her, but, you know, kind of like being aligned with Bray. And obviously they've teased it, you know. But, yeah, I mean, she could be on her own. Look, I just think Alexa having a darker kind of gimmick is helpful. And I hope they give her a mask, and I hope they kind of help her do her thing again, because, you know, that's going to definitely help her be a top merch seller too. Again, whether
sale.
We like it or not.
And she's getting sale. She's getting a little sale.
You know, maybe that might be the case. But I think that the fans want her to kind of go back to that darker character. And I think that the fans kind of want to see her in that role again. So, you know, let's see how they get there. But I think, you know, once she does, it's going to be money for sure.
Absolutely. Moving on to the Women's Royal Rumble, Rhea Ripley makes history in joining the Heartbreak Kid Shawn Michaels in 1995, Chris Benoit in 2004, and Edge in 2021 as being the number one entrant and being the last, and now in her case, the last woman standing, a first in the history of the Women's Royal Rumble. Again, it's only been a brief history. We're going back to 2018. I had the privilege of being in attendance, not in Philadelphia because it's a shithole, but I had the privilege of being there live to witness the first Women's Royal Rumble, that historic event where Asuka won at the Wells Fargo Center. But in the brief history of the Women's Royal Rumble, no one's come close to winning the Women's Royal Rumble being such an early number, but Rhea Ripley did it. Some nice entrances, seeing Chelsea Green, fresh from her exit from Impact Wrestling. Great to see Asuka come out with that gimmick, that darker gimmick. Great to see Piper Niven return. Not a fan. I never liked that Dewdrop thing. I think that was just an atrocious name. I don't know who thought that was a good idea. You know, I didn't like it, but nice to see her back. Obviously, some other surprises. I was hoping for maybe Carmella, Naomi. That didn't happen. Nia Jax returning, Pat. You know how I feel about Nia Jax. I, you know, not my cup of tea visually. I get it. A lot of guys like that look. She is someone who, to some extent, has improved, but I wouldn't say exponentially. She certainly gets a reaction out of people. You saw it on social media. You saw the hate for Nia Jax coming back. And, you know, yeah, there was a little bit of a pop for her. I wouldn't say it was crazy, deafening in the Alamo Dome. But, yeah, it got people riled up. And, you know, in the end, Rhea Ripley was left with Asuka and Liv Morgan. Liv Morgan started at number two. It was interesting. Obviously, back, you know, almost wire to wire, as they say. Great storytelling. Rhea surviving, being the first woman to win the Women's Royal Rumble at number one. And now she challenges Charlotte Flair. Maybe she'll get that win back that she didn't get in 2020 when Charlotte won the Royal Rumble and challenged Rhea for the NXT Women's Championship and lost at WrestleMania that year during the COVID era inside the Performance Center. So, hey, a lot of moving parts here, bro.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, really cool to see Rhea get the win. I love the way the match was produced, especially the end. Getting to see the return of the Psycho Clown Asuka, I thought was really great. That got a huge pop. And then, you know, putting her, you know, as the last three. I'm a Nia Jax fan. I think she's got a unique look. She's definitely somebody that does stick out from all the other girls. And I definitely love the fact that the Marks hate her and she gets so much heat from them. And you know, it's funny you say, like, she's never made an effort to improve. Do you know? Have you ever trained with her? Have you seen her, training at all?
Well, no, I get it, Pat, but I mean, the optic, like, we've watched enough matches. We've watched her from her debut.
What is the optic? What is the optic? I mean, are you fucking Vern Gagne or something? Are you Dean Malenko?
No.
I didn't know?
I get that, but from watching her debut to headlining a WrestleMania 5 years ago against Alexa in the Superdome to then, like, in a tag team with Tamina, and then a tag team with Shayna Baszler. Like, I understand and I get you about, hey, she checks off a lot of boxes because she pisses off Marks. She comes across as whatever. Again, it's not
she's
my
legit. She's legit.
No,
it's believable.
She's a believable monster, sure. And if you book her that way, absolutely. I think she checks off a lot of boxes for that. I just think that never been great promo, never been good on the microphone, never been, you know, never blown me away on the microphone. Yes, she's been in some hot angles, some funny botches, right, on Botchamania, you know, that only feeds the Marks, as they say. I understand, Pat, you know, again, whatever the family lineage is with Dwayne Johnson and Roman Reigns, it's a weird dynamic. I think I read the family tree or something. I'd have to look at it again, but it wasn't like this direct lineation. I know there's a way, you know, it's sort of like six ways from Sunday, as they say. I get it. Not for me. You know, I understand why the purpose she serves, and if you book her as a monster, she can do that, but I don't know, man. A little botchy for me. Not that there isn't enough material there. Botchamania gets a lot of material from her for a reason, you know? But they do from everybody. You know, no one's perfect in the ring, as we know. Just not for me.
I just think that, you know, again, like, wrestling people think that she's good enough to be there. Wrestling people feel like she's talented enough. They've been trying to court her to come back. And she doesn't want to because she has other things going on, you know? If wrestling people think that she's of value, that says a lot more than fans saying that she's not good. Honestly, she's very important in wrestling history. And I think fans tend to forget that because if it wasn't for her breaking Becky Lynch's nose, we wouldn't have that great visual of Becky. And that ball wouldn't get rolling for Becky becoming the man like the way it did. So, she's definitely played a big part in modern wrestling history. And I think that she's somebody that's talented. And obviously wrestling people within WWE feel that she's talented. And more importantly, she pisses off the Marks. I thought that the psychology of eliminating her was great. Everybody, you know, ganging up on her talking all this shit. Like, it was perfect. It was good stuff. But a very well-produced Women's Royal Rumble. Love the spots at the end. Love seeing Psycho Clown Asuka again. Liv Morgan, definitely somebody who you can see has really, 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 really improved. And is, you know, for me, I feel like she's missing that thing. You know what I mean? It's kind of like, you know, when you and I would talk some years back, you know, off the air about, you know, Seth Rollins, who was a guy who was, you know, immensely talented, can do it all, but was missing that personality, was missing that thing, was missing that character. And then he eventually found himself, and, you know, he's the drip messiah, and, you know, he's got that Joker-esque kind of character, but, you know, he's a guy that was missing that persona, and he found it. And I just feel like Liv just needs that thing. And I think that once she finds that thing, she's going to, you know, go to that next level. And Rhea was somebody who's kind of the same way. Rhea checked all the boxes, the look, you know, everything. A decent talker, has improved immensely as a talker. But that Judgment Day angle, you know, and her kind of being, you know, the centerpiece of that, her, you know, her nods to Eddie Guerrero and China with Dom, you know, I think it's fantastic. And by the way, I totally forgot to put him over during the Men's Rumble, but Dom Mysterio is another guy, you know. I mean, man, this kid is just progressing. He's becoming better and better. And I don't give a fuck. I mean, if Marks don't want to hear this, feel free to email the show. But this dude is light years ahead of Hook, you know, Jungle Boy, you know, and Action Andretti and all these people that AEW is trying to push, all these young stars. Dom's light years ahead of those guys, you know. But even he's doing fantastic work with what he's doing. And, you know, him lasting as long as he did and getting all that heat in the Rumble and Cody eliminating him, I mean, it was great stuff. Mm-hmm. But Rhea, you know, back to her, Rhea's somebody who found herself, you know.
Pat, it's interesting when you mentioned Dom. And I apologize, folks, for the oversight there about Dom's presence in the Men's Rumble, because he started up with kind of an early number. He was a midway number. He was number 18. He was number 19 because Rey Mysterio was number 18. And obviously we're seeing the inference there that he jumped his father, took his mask. So I thought it was a brilliant storytelling there with Dominic for sure. It's weird though, man, because it's like, you know, you mentioned Hook, and I think it's a great comparison to have because of his father being in the business. You would think Hook would be further along because he's there with his dad. It's not like his dad works for a rival company. Like, he's there with his dad. I just find it weird. And, as Dominic is there with his father, and yes, of course, he has the advantage that he was in the Performance Center for some time developing before he made it to the main roster with his dad, and obviously having that historic moment, being the only father-son team to win the WWE tag titles. But, like, it's weird. Like, Taz is there. And you would think that with the proximity and having access to his dad, that Hook would be further along. Again, I don't want to sound like an asshole here, but it's kind of an indictment on Taz, almost. I think it's like, yo, your son's there. Your son should be further along because you have contact with him. Like, he's there every week. I just find it really, really odd, man. I hate to sound like it's an indictment of Taz, but I can't think of a better word to maybe condemn why his son isn't further along.
You know what? I'm not going to blame Taz. I'm going to blame Hook on this one because Dom is a guy that I think sees that he needs to improve. But more importantly, he understands that, you know, being in the business long-term and being successful in the business long-term is about being a character. And he takes a lot of inspiration from Eddie Guerrero, his real father, in my opinion. And, you know, he takes a lot of inspiration from him. And even Eddie, who was one of the greatest to ever do it, even Eddie realized, hey, I got to be a character. I got to be more of a character. I got to inject this personality into that person that they see on TV. And I think Dom gets that, and I think Dom understands that. More importantly, I think that Dom works a style that is better suited for his physique and for his build right now, whereas Hook is trying to work a style that doesn't really work for a guy his size. You know, Hook is a bit of an undersized dude, and for him to be a human suplex machine like the way his father was, it doesn't work. You know, Taz was a short, stocky guy with a wide back and big legs, and you looked at Taz and you believed, hey, this guy's a shooter, and he's a judo player, and this guy's going to drop a motherfucker on his head, and it was believable. There was nobody in ECW that was questioning the legitimacy of him. None.
Yeah.
You just believed it, whether it was through the promos, whether it was how Shane Douglas helped get him over. You believed what Taz was doing. With Hook, I do not believe what Hook is doing at all. I look at Hook and I see a kid playing pretend wrestler, you know? And that's no disrespect to him. I'm sure he's a great person. I'm sure he's a talented young man. He's very athletic, obviously. But to me, just how they're presenting Hook and how they're presenting Dom are night and day. And I just think that, yeah, maybe to some extent you could blame Taz a little bit, because maybe Taz could say, hey, kid, hit the weights before you start doing all this stuff. But I'm sure he's probably so proud of his son that, you know, he doesn't want to do that. But he should. He really, really should, because
I agree with you. It's doing him a disservice, because it's not believable that a guy that looks like Tom Holland, even Tom Holland has a better build. You watch Spider-Man movies, folks. Tom Holland at least works out. Whether he's taking HGH or whatever, you can tell his build is a little more believable than Hook. I mean, I look at Hook and he's like, what, 6'1", 6 feet maybe? I don't know. But
He's 5'10". He's 5'10" with lips, okay?
Okay.
And this kid is like a buck sixty, buck 70 soaking wet, and he's suplexing a guy like Big Bill. He's suplexing and making a guy like Ethan Page, who's much bigger than he is, afraid. You don't see that with Dom. Hook doesn't work from underneath in a match, like the way Dom would, or like the way even Jungle Boy does. You know?
Yep.
So
right.
I don't know.
That's
I just think that there's a certain sense of awareness lacking there. But not to sidetrack any further, but Rhea did a great job. The Women's Rumble was produced very, very well. And I'm really looking forward to the potential matchup that Rhea is going to have at WrestleMania. And I think that this is a second shot at for her at redemption. And to really make up for that matchup that she had at the PC, you know, all those years ago.
Yep, definitely, because we were all looking forward to that, obviously, when Charlotte jumped her at the NXT TakeOver in Portland in February 2020, I remember. On the side note, good to see a TakeOver finally, you know, back out for NXT, you know, out in a live arena this weekend. Moving on to the main event, the fourth time really on a pay-per-view headlining between Roman Reigns and Kevin Owens. I would argue this was their best match ever. No stipulation, no nothing, just a straight up wrestling match. Great, very physical, a lot of near finishes, great storytelling. Obviously, you're seeing the emotional turmoil with Sammy on the outside with Paul Heyman. You're seeing them, again, looking divided and torn between his allegiance to Roman and, of course, his allegiance to his lifelong friend, a guy who was the best man at his wedding. Some years ago, without question, a great match. You know, again, a little disbelief, a little suspense in the sense that, you know, Owens had him beat a couple of times. The referee got knocked out, you know, which is what you want to do for the face. You know, the face is, you know, you want to create that doubt. Oh, the face had him, but the referee was down. You know, we've seen that a million times. Great storytelling. Obviously, Reigns beats him with a spear. After pretty much, you know, after spearing him through the guardrail and then getting in the ring, you know, there was like this defiant slap by Kevin Owens, like one last gasp by him after he was pretty much annihilated on the outside. A great win by the Tribal Chief. Certainly afterwards, the Bloodline came in, beat the piss out of Kevin Owens. I mean, I counted 11 super kicks between the Usos. You had Solo Sikoa doing, you know, an homage to Umaga, a fellow family member. They handcuffed Kevin Owens to the ring ropes. I mean, you want to talk about a guy, folks? Again, I don't like to use this term. You want to talk about crucifying someone and put him on the cross? Boy, did he bear a cross there. Kevin Owens got annihilated, and just as you know. Just as Roman Reigns wanted to take one last shot with a chair and maybe finish him off for good, Sammy stops him. There's a back and forth between Roman. And quite frankly, again, great storytelling. Roman was peer pressuring Sammy to take him out. He didn't. And a little bit of an homage to when Seth Rollins broke up the Shield with that chair shot to Roman. Sammy delivered the exact same one. Great response by Roman.
a little teasing there, obviously, from what happened 9 years ago. Sami Zayn turns on the Bloodline. They annihilate him, leave him laying. A little bit of a twist, interesting twist. Jey Uso, the one guy that was always on him and never trusted him, even after Survivor Series, Jey Uso did not want to partake in the beatdown of Sami Zayn and left the ring. Pretty much a chorus of boos, 50,000 people screaming, fuck you, Roman, I think was a great optic to make him even more of a vicious heel. Great main event, great storytelling. I'm looking forward to SmackDown to see the fallout.
Yeah, man. I mean, what can you say? What can you say that you didn't pretty much already say about this? I mean, like, everything about it was just perfect. The crowd was into it. That ending segment was viewed about 20 million times across all platforms, which that's bananas. The facial expressions, from Sammy, from Kevin, from Heyman, from Roman, the Usos, even Solo, who's generally a pretty stoic character. The emotion, the turmoil that Sammy was having ringside, just everything about it. It was just peak storytelling. And I had seen a lot of people refer to it as cinema. And that's what it felt like. I mean, it felt like an episode of The Sopranos. You know what I mean? It felt so big, so huge. And all of those characters were just so good, man. And it to me, it was just a really, really special moment for the business, a special moment for those talents involved, and definitely something that has built up a lot of anticipation for tonight. I'm looking forward to watching it in about 44 minutes or so. And I'm sure that everybody that's listening now will be tuning in too. But I mean, Fern, when you talk about perfect storytelling, I mean, I can't think of a better story being told than that, and just that turn in the road, like that taking it somewhere else and just, look, you already knew it was going to be a matter of time, whether it was the Bloodline turning on him, but having Sammy turn for doing the right thing, I think was amazing. The fuck you Roman chants were awesome. So much so to the point that, it was so loud that even they had to acknowledge it on TV, even they had to acknowledge it, on Peacock and during the show. But just everything that went into it, and then them laying Sammy out, and then to throw that final twist in there, you have Jey, who was like Sammy's biggest hater, if you will, being the guy to just not like it and to just back away, to just walk out of the ring because he didn't want anything to do with it because it was hurting him. And he was even crying as he was making his way back up the ramp, up the walkway.
Yeah. It was,
it was
great storytelling. I think it was great storytelling. I think it obviously, you've seen the seeds being planted for Roman Reigns and Sammy at Elimination Chamber, which is only a couple of weeks away, really. So not a lot of time, per se, to develop. I mean, there's a storyline obviously there for months and months and months, if not 2 years worth, really. It'll be interesting where this goes with Sami Zayn. Again, not a guy. I don't think fans can hijack this so much like they did with Daniel Bryan in 2014. Might come close in the sense of how over he is, and maybe fans want him to be in the title picture. Well, he'll be in the title picture later this month at Elimination Chamber in Montreal. So I think it'll be very interesting to see for sure, again, as we continue on the road to WrestleMania. Pat, before we call it a show here, or just about coming up here on the two-hour mark here, the time flies when we're dissecting wrestling as great as we do, Pat. That's for sure. On this day in wrestling history, obviously a year after arguably the biggest rating in the history of NBC with the main event on a Friday night from Market Square Arena between Hulk Hogan and Andre the Giant for the WWF Championship. The following year, the second edition of the main event aired on NBC from the Bradley Center in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And that rating got 11.6, up from the 10 million the year before. The reason this was historic, ladies and gentlemen, the mega powers Hulk Hogan at the time, the WWF undisputed world heavyweight champion, the Macho Man Randy Savage with Miss Elizabeth, challenged the Twin Towers, the Big Boss Man, and a team who I think should be in the WWE Hall of Fame, in my opinion. Great, very underrated heel tag team, in my opinion. We all know what happened. Miss Elizabeth got knocked out by a very scary bump, by the way. If you go back and watch that, folks, what a scary bump she took, having the King throw the Macho Man out of the ring and him landing on Elizabeth. We saw what happened. Hogan took her to the back to attend to her in the medical room. He came back out. Macho Man lost it. They broke up. Macho Man jumped Hogan, beat the shit out of him in the hospital room. That dissolved the Mega Powers, which would lead to their main event at WrestleMania that year at Trump Plaza in Atlantic City. But on this day, folks, February the 3rd, 1989, the Mega Powers exploded. This day in pro wrestling history. Pat, before we call it a week here, what you got here? Close it out.
So I just want to actually make an announcement on behalf of Working the Marks here. Our family's actually growing here, and we're going to be having our very own D. Rotten, who's a part of Fancast Media, along with a buddy of mine, Luke Ackerman. You know, and both of those guys were guys that I was in a band with. The infamous Hudson County Scumbags. And both of these guys are going to be bringing you a weekly program that's associated along with Working the Marks, where they're going to be dissecting all different types of news from Impact, from AEW, and from other promotions that are not WWE. So we really look forward to Luke and Dave, or excuse me, Dee, joining us as a part of the Working the Marks family. And obviously that's a big testament to all you fans out there, whether you love us, whether you hate us, whether you're bored, whether you're taking a dump and listening to it, it doesn't matter. We appreciate all your support. And obviously we love the feedback. So please feel free to write the show. Don't write me, because I'm not going to fucking write back, because I'm a jerk. But write the show and, you know, just keep the support coming as we continue to grow. And obviously, you know, look out for Dee and Luke and lend them that same support as well, because they're going to be bringing you some great content as well. Really looking forward to them joining up with us. And at some point in time, I'm sure we'll do an episode with the four of us. And, you know, we'll do our own version of the John, Paul, George, Ringo, Bobby, Susie, Nikki, Vinny, Tony, Johnny, and Beavis show like they do on a Wrestling Observer newsletter. But definitely great to see that our Working the Marks family is growing. And again, folks, keep the support coming. We appreciate it. Stay warm out there, and obviously I look forward to being back on the program and dissecting all things sports, entertainment, and professional wrestling here with the professor, Fernando Uribe.
Well said there by the PBR superstar, folks. Again, ladies and gentlemen, check it out this Monday, the latest edition of Real Talk with Fernando Uribe via Jersey First TV. We'll have a great legislative candidate. We're just finalizing that. Coming up this Monday, live at 6 p.m. Eastern time. And I can't say enough about, quite frankly, the support I get on Monday nights with Real Talk via Jersey First, as Jersey First will be moving to Verizon Fios coming up on April the 1st. Really excited about that, growing the brand, not just with myself, but my great teammates, Elizabeth Nader, the host of the Nader Narrative. And again, you know, one of the more premier, I would argue, broadcast journalists in New Jersey media. You know, obviously we know it's not always kind to women when it comes to that, but I got to say, at least, you know, Elizabeth Nader is doing a great job with her show, the Nader Narrative, which you can catch on Thursdays, certainly on Jersey First. And of course, my other great teammates, Bridging the Gap, their show is amazing. Millennials, conservative millennials that are really kind of breaking down exactly how many millennials are getting more conservative these days and why. And they bring a great show to you every Thursday as well, with AJ Malilo and Stephen Rombolo, Bridging the Gap. I can't say enough about Jersey First TV, folks. Check it out there on jerseyfirst.org/TV. Also, folks, hit up our email here on the program, workinthemarks@gmail.com. Shoot us an email. What you like about the show, what you don't like about the show. Am I cursing too much? Am I not cursing enough? Whatever. What the fuck? Email, workingthemarks@gmail.com. And, of course, make sure you check us out on all of our social media, @working_the_marks on Instagram. Of course, on Twitter, @working_marks. And, of course, make sure you check us out on blogtalkradio.com/talk. Work in the Marks. And of course, folks, Famcast Media brings you Work in the Marks every single week, wherever you get your podcast. Download them, take them with you. Whether you are working off those stubborn holiday pounds, maybe trying to get in shape for Valentine's Day so your significant other isn't calling you a fat ass, or you have a dad bod, whatever. Walking your dog, doing homework, I don't know, doing your bills, and you want to listen to something instructive and engaging, folks, it's always here with Work in the Marks. He is the premier wrestling analyst in the state of New Jersey, the illustrious, the glorious, the dubious, the just, I'll tell you, the distinguished PBR superstar, Patrick Rivera. I am New Jersey's premier wrestling journalist, and just in general, and the weapon of mass disruption here in Garden State Media. Folks, it's me, the professor, Fernando Ruby. And every single week, folks, here on Blog Talk Radio, we are Working the Marks. We'll see you next week, folks. Enjoy NXT Vengeance Day on Peacock. And we'll see you next week here as we will bring you more of Working the Marks on Blog Talk Radio. Have a great one, folks.